I played it last year or year before. I thought it was quite gonzo, actually.
It is. It is. Although, I mean, Neil's character is like, you know, a death machine.
Really?
Surprise, surprise.
Hi, this is Steve, aka at AllAnthar on Twitter, and here are some more of my gaming vexes. Okay, all right, so we're here today to talk about RuneQuest and the RuneQuest game we played in. So I suppose, first of all, as is traditional, let's do a bit of going around the room. Who are you? And also a little bit of an intro to your character, in, if you can remember, it's that long ago.
Jenny, at Jenny underscore Vaca on the Bluebird site, and at Jenny's Evil Twin at ludosphere.fr on the Hairy Elephant site. And I played Bofrost, and after his untimely demise, I played Boston, an Australian merchant happy to be in Sarta, far from his bossy wife.
That was, without spoilers, the Boston was the only character death through almost 5 years of gaming, which I think probably is a record.
Bofrost.
Yeah, yeah. That was after Doc mocked my Chaos Wasps, and they came on and stung him in the head and killed him dead. So that was a shame.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy that at all. So that was very sad.
Of course you didn't. Martin MCookie123 on Twitter. And I played Ursa, who was a sort of big, tall woman who liked horses.
I think all the characters evolved quite a lot, didn't they, over the course of the years we were playing it? Because, Ursa sort of became quite almost like a bit of a tragic figure, didn't she, as time went on?
Oh, that's not how I saw her, Steve. Thanks a lot.
You saw her as a rip-roaring, rollicking adventuress, didn't you? Loving warfare.
She was a sad, quite melancholic.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
So I'm Neil. I'm at Old Scouser RPing on Twitter and at Old Scouse Roleplayer on Mastodon. And I was playing Terrastal. So Terrastal was a level-headed, well-considered, thoughtful, strategic. No, he wasn't any of those things. He was he was driven by his hatred of Lunas. He was an Orlanthi warrior and not knowing a great deal of RuneQuest at all. In fact, it'd been a long, long time since I played it, and I only played it once or twice back in the day. So it was a big learning curve for me, and a simple character seemed the way to go.
good fun it was too. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So over to you then, Doc.
Right. Well, Sandy was one of the first characters I made in proper RuneQuest Glorantha to play. And I went rather all in on, the background and the runes. And Sandine was a Babista Gore initiate, Sandine 3 Death. She'd had two slightly complicated deaths in the past and come back, once brought back via the Earth and once brought back via the Death Rune, but she'd been cut off from Earth. So one of the factors was because the other characters had been made in RuneQuest 2.
Didn't you start off in RuneQuest 2 as well? Didn't
no,
Sandy?
No, 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 no.
Really?
No, Sandine was full on RuneQuest Glorantha, which is why she was a little bit more
meaty,
potent than the others. So I designed her so she was cut off from the Earth thing, so she didn't use her axe. She didn't use her Earth Rune, and she just, she basically just used a bow because she was a bandit at the time. Mm-hmm. And until we met a dreamer, and through various bits and pieces, she was reunited with the Earth Rune and became a proper Babista Gore initiate again. But yes, she was great with an axe. She wore heavy armor.
Yeah.
She rapidly got to know the other individuals, but she was fairly no-nonsense. She increasingly saw herself as a guardian to the others, trying to avoid them. She's Babista Gore, right? That they're designed to be guardians. Somehow she thought she was supposed to look after them because, they were with her. They guided her to a dreamer. They guided her back to Babista Gore. So, she felt that she should look after them. even when it was not an obviously good thing to do.
Yeah. I'm surprised, really, because I know you weren't with us right at the very start, because essentially we had Graham Kinnebert to start with, and then he left, and then and we didn't know each other at this point, did we? So even on Twitter, I hadn't annoyed you on Twitter at that point either. Yeah. Zoss Andrew said, "Come and join the game," and I went, "That's fine."
Fine.
Who is this person?
Yeah, that leaves me. I'm Andrew. You can find me at Zoss93 on Twitter, and same thing on the Dice Camp at Mastodon. I played Randall, who was a merchant of Visaris and eventual steadholder in Sartor.
Good stuff. And obviously, I was running the game. And so, for me, this was the first game I'd run or played or done anything since coming out of Deep Freeze. I'd played a little bit of D&D 5e, but I hadn't run a game for probably 20 years.
Can I just quickly say, because I'm pretty sure at this point I should say, no way, Steve.
No way.
I can't believe it. You were so good. That's fine. You can carry on.
So I sort of put a bit of a call out on Twitter. So I'd got, you know, hold of the RQ2 rulebook and Cults of Prax. And I think that was it, actually. And just put a call out on Twitter. And you guys responded, didn't you? And all I wanted to do was just basically just to roll some dice, have a bit of fun, and to actually run RuneQuest, which I'd never done before. I mean, back in the day, I'd heard about, you know, Humacti and some of these terms that just sort of came out of the air and sounded so romantic and amazing, but I had no clue what they were. So my expectations coming in was just really just to play RuneQuest. And I'd never been an aficionado of someone who knew a lot about Glorantha at all. So I'm not, and I'm definitely not a Glorantha file. I don't, you know, get into it in that level of detail. But yeah, so that was me, really. It was just about to sort of play a bit of a game. What about you guys sort of coming into, because I think you all came, as Neil said, from different perspectives in terms of RuneQuest and level of immersion in it.
Well, so for me, it was my first game out of the Deep Freeze as well. I think originally, Steve, you put something out on Twitter, didn't you? Was it on Twitter originally?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And I saw that, and that was enough for me. Because at the time I didn't have much to do in the evenings and stuff. I was sort of living on my own, away from things. So I thought, oh, fantastic! This is really good. And I'd heard the Grognard files, so I'd kind of got like a little bit, like, you know, an itch had appeared that hadn't appeared for a while that needed scratching. So that was perfect. And I had played, like, so when I was back in the day, all I played pretty much was RuneQuest, Call of Cthulhu, and then, you know, bits and bobs of other stuff. And so the idea of playing RuneQuest again, especially RQ2, is fantastic. So like when we played RuneQuest back in the day, and I don't know what other people's experiences was, but basically I played it because I didn't like Dungeons & Dragons. But we did exactly the same thing that we would have done in Dungeons & Dragons, just using RuneQuest rules. So yeah. you would play Dungeons & Dragons scenarios, and the whole mythic side of Glorantha just kind of passed you by. Because to be fair, in the RQ2 book on its own, there ain't much about, mm-hmm. you know, what we now understand as Glorantha sort of thing, or as you grew to understand about Glorantha. So, yeah. So starting a Glorantha game was just fantastic.
Shall I go next? I mean, RuneQuest 2 was actually the first game I ever bought and the first game I ever played, bought from the legendary Games Workshop store in Dalling Road in London in about 1980, I think. So, yeah, I'm a real Glorantha file. I got really, the book that got me into Glorantha wasn't the RuneQuest main rulebook, which, as Martin said, doesn't contain a lot of Glorantha information. It was actually Cults of Prax, the cults guide that came out around the same time. I mean, there's a story in that travels of Bituriam Varosh, right, who's a Saris merchant, and he travels around meeting all the cult members of all the cults, and that really drew me into Glorantha, and I ended up, yeah, collecting pretty much anything to do with Glorantha. So.
And you played a lot of...
We played a lot of RuneQuest in the 80s, yeah. Moved on to RuneQuest 3 from Avalon Hill. Not that great until the real sort of RuneQuest Renaissance in the 90s. But by then, we pretty much stopped playing it, really. I still bought the books, but got back into playing it. I suppose probably your game, really, yeah, after not playing it for quite a few years, yeah.
Oh, well, I had no special expectations, to be honest. I saw your message on Twitter, and since RuneQuest is my favorite role-playing game, and has always been, I was just happy to find an online group to play RuneQuest on top of my face-to-face group here in Paris, where I was the GM, and I was happy to be a player rather than the GM for once, because my group here, we have played HeroQuest for a long time. And remember when we started playing RuneQuest, the new version hasn't been published. So everybody who was into Granta was playing Hero rather than Rune. And we were part of the playtest group. So we had received the new rules, but I was the GM. And, you know, I was frustrated not to be able to be a player. So when I saw your message, I was very happy to be part of it.
Go. Why not?
Yeah. And so, I must say, everything you have just said, I'm so surprised, because you have run the game so flawlessly that I'm really surprised that when you said that, you know, you have had
stop
never
it, I'm blushing.
GM RuneQuest. No, really, I'm flabbergasted.
Oh, bless you. So did you know any, because I think obviously, Andrew, you knew Doc Cowie, I think, beforehand, didn't you? Is that right?
I met Doc at the first ever Grog meet in 2016. I mean, I did sort of know him tangentially, and I used to work with his sister, although we never actually got to meet at that point.
Okay, yeah. It's interesting hearing these kind of origin stories and in relation to the
that's what we're here for.
Campaign. Because I hated RuneQuest. I really hated it, like back in the 80s, and I guess it's very much like the group you fall in with, or the, you know, experiences you have at the table. And I remember playing the games club I went to, playing a game of RuneQuest, and looking back on it now, I think the GM was pretty inexperienced, and there's some other players there who kind of pushed the GM in the direction they wanted, and they had these ridiculous characters that were so overpowered, but my character wasn't, and it was just and it just didn't feel like fun to me. I just didn't enjoy it, and then the ducks thing, of course, just even now still grinds my gears. I know some people love it, but
ducks are the coolest thing, innit? They're tragic characters, a bit like Ursa.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're comical, pathetic characters that are just don't have a place in it.
You're just going to lose the duck audience straight away.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you know,
the duck demographic. It's
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's gone.
I came to terms with that a long time ago. You know, and I suppose I'm trying to think really why I actually thought it'd be a good idea to play it. Maybe, I guess, maybe a bit more open-minded. And I think I had been listening to the Grognard Files quite a bit. I must have been to, so I'm guessing this was 2018, Steve.
Whether it was Christmas. So I listened to the Grognard Files on Christmas 2017. That's right.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I remember sitting in Sainsbury's car park. Listening to the first episode of the Grognard Files when it's talking about room, I'm just in a search for it. And I remember this whole, is Proustian Rush the right thing? I don't know, that sort of, that sense of just,
yeah,
it all came back. I think, what have I been doing in my life? Not playing role-playing games.
Overwhelming gush of, yeah. So I guess then, because I went to Grogmeet in 2017. So I'm Andrew, I must have, because we definitely met at that first, at that Grog meet, you dropped into a game I was playing, and I think we also played in the Knights Black Agents game as well.
Yeah, we did the
Striking
Miners one.
That's right. Yeah. So I knew Andrew, but I don't know if I've met Doc at that point. I don't know. I guess maybe I'd just become a little bit more curious about it, listen to Grognard Files, and I don't know. I just thought, well, I'll give it a go. And I think it might have even been your kind of enthusiasm for it, Steve, as well, in your posts. That kind of thought, well, you know, this guy seems to know what he's doing, so let's give it a go. And there you go. The rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah. I hadn't played RuneQuest properly. Okay. For that was the first RuneQuest campaign I'd been in for 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I played RuneQuest all the time when I was younger, but you know, I I sort of lost touch with it a bit in the 90s. Yeah. And even when I got back, there just weren't other people who played RuneQuest. No, going to Grogmeet and meeting Andrews, Jones and Smith,
mm-hmm.
And discovering other Gloranthophiles was like the first time I'd been in a room with other Glorantha geeks for years.
I bet you got so excited. I wished I'd have been there.
But Chris was there. And my God, he did not wish he was there. He was miserable.
Oh, my word. That's brilliant. Like I say, I came into it wanted to run RuneQuest, just to give it a go. So I say it was the first game that I started to play. And the intent was really just to do like a short series. So we started, if you recall, with the Broken Tower. So we just did a bit of that, really. And at the time we had, Doc wasn't there from the outset. So we had Graham Kinnebar. It sort of started off with us, yeah. And the way it's in my head, the way it was working, I thought, we'll do it for eight sessions or so. And at the time, because it was one, I was only running one game, I was writing a lot of like fiction behind it as well. So when we finished the sessions, I'd write those up as just a bit of a story, really. And in fact, they're still out there. They're still on my blog, which I never update anymore. So I'll put the link in if anyone wants to read 70,000 words worth of RuneQuest, because that's pretty much what it is. But it just seemed to keep going. So, we started with a short series, and then I was reading a lot of things like HeroQuest stuff and the Guide to Sartre and that sort of thing. And I think what happened was right at the start, I sowed the seeds of my own downfall. So I read in the Sartre Companion, I think it is, it talks about the wedding contest, which is this sort of big mythic thing that a trip into hell. And I thought, I don't know, let's start on this route. And basically, it was like getting on the top of a roller coaster. And by the time we went over to the edge and we started on that whole thing, then it took on a life of its own, really. For you guys who were or are Gloranthophiles, I mean, I don't count myself and probably Neil isn't that, how Gloranthery was it? Because I was just chucking stuff in, really. The stuff that I thought was interesting.
I thought it was really, really Gloranthery. You know, I thought it worked really well. You know, I thought you played a lot of the politics quite well. I mean, aided to some extent by having Tavistall just as a loose cannon and... myself as the attempting to be moderating influence, but I thought it was really well done, actually. So And also I thought you were very good at taking on board other people's ideas, or just run, your thing is the rule of cool, and I think that works quite well, because it meant that in situations, you know, people like Martin, Doc, Johnny and myself who knew a bit of Glorantha could come up with an idea, and you were like, we're just going to run with that because it's really cool. You know, even if perhaps you only had a somewhat limited understanding of...
I think that's probably fair to say. Most things are limited understanding. Right.
No, I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Oh, no, thanks. Just for you, so I think what I was really... I didn't realise going into it, because you hear these horror stories about, you know, like it's the thing about what year is it, and that's
yeah.
And from you guys, because I had no idea about the depth of knowledge that some of us have got about Gloranthha, but I never got any of that back ever. There was never a thing that came back, and I think, you know, it could have been a much different experience if I'd have started running a game like this, and then we'd have got into the probably after a few sessions it would have just stopped. But I think everyone was so, you know, generous in terms, as you say, we're all there to have a good time, we're all responsible for the fun,
right,
you know? And that came through really strongly. So yeah, it could have been so much different, because you hear these horror stories. We never had that discussion, apart from about stirrups. We never had that discussion. We never had that. There was never a thing about, you know, what year is it, did we? And I think,
well I genuinely hope not, in that I think it's a fundamental thing. If you love something, you want other people to love it too, and constantly pointing out that they're loving it wrong just seems weird. So no, I think, you know, the vast majority of people, you know, who are big Gloranthha fans, yes, are really decent about it. I think there are some people who get quite upset, and I think they sometimes forget, you know. It's like talking to philosophers or something. If a philosopher's talking to another philosopher, they'll have, you know, a huge argument about, you know, incredibly tedious details. And that's fine. They love that bit, but they've got to be able to expand Does that sound really patronizing? I hope not.
When my son talks about philosophy to me, he has to sort of turn it into very basic baby spoons. And I can understand that. Whereas if he's talking to one of his, you know, people he went to university with, it's completely different. I can't understand what
it's like. People who love Warhammer or Lord of the Rings.
Warhammer.
You know, there's enormous backstories there.
Yeah.
And there's people who know it a little bit, there's people who know it a lot, and they have different sorts of conversations. But no, I did feel that we were generally, as you say, apart from the stirrup incident, I felt that we were all very happy with
it. Flavor and colour, and that was always good. you wore your knowledge lightly, which is good.
Which is all that matters.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think for me, because back in the day when we played RuneQuest, we basically, all everything we did was all in Prax and Sun County and paper. Mm. And so we completely swerved Orlanth and Dragon Pass and all that. So to be honest, like, I was approaching Dragon Pass with kind of half remembered stuff that I didn't really, wasn't internalized in any way, because we hadn't played around the Dragon Pass area at all. So it was really cool for me. I loved it. Because it was kind of like a bit of Glanth, I couldn't really remember that well, and it was all a bit new, and I, you know, that was really good. So I think in terms of me being a Glanthophile, I would say that maybe in bits, like, if anybody, you know, can claim to be a super duper Glanthophile across everything, but certainly a bit of it I wasn't really that knowledgeable about was Dragon Pass. So setting the game there was brilliant. I really loved it. I learned a lot.
all of it useful. Life
skills. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I could carry it on in my daily life.
I think the source of information wasn't really available, though. It more or less came out with the Hero Quest kind of...
That's right,
The Sartor Box of Hero Quest. It certainly wasn't available in the 80s, you know, to such an extent. It was developed sort of a RuneQuest Renaissance and the message boards and, you know, and then kind of codified with the Hero Quest Sartor books.
Mm.
You know, so in that respect, RuneQuest Glorantha did a really good job of providing a background. I mean, I know some people complain that it's too intimidating for new players, but I actually really like it. I think it's actually quite a good introduction.
You just mentioned the word intimidating, and you read this a lot online about, you know, people who don't want to try RuneQuest or playing Glorantha because it's... But honestly, Glorantha is not about, you know, being knowledgeable about the endless quarrels between the Sartorite clans, or, you know, when the Lunar Empire invaded Sartor or whatever. For me, it's about living the myth and eventually embarking on a hero quest. And once this is settled, anything can be rune quest, you know, even a dungeon crawl or city crawl, wilderness adventure, a game with combat, a game without combat, but only social interactions, anything really. And, you know, okay, we're talking about your game, Steve, but my most successful RuneQuest campaign ever was a Noisar mega dungeon that I took and Glorantified and ran as a mega dungeon under Mount Tomorit in the Kingdom of Ignorant. And, you know, in the Guide to Glorantha, it's just a sentence. It says, "This high snow-capped peak is populated by sunshine bandits, artists, and madmen." That's it. A single sentence. And I run a campaign in it for 2 years. So to people who say, you know, you got to know the whole guide, you have to be super knowledgeable about minutiae, it's wrong, you know. Mm. I played RuneQuest in Glorantha in a locale that has only one sentence in the guide. And we had fun because at the end we had a hero quest.
So what's the minimum that something needs to have? And this isn't about being exclusionary or trying to, you know, but I'm just interested, what's just enough to make it Glorantha-y? So I'm thinking the creatures, things like brew, ducks, you know, maybe some other places. But what in terms of the activity? Is it all about Hero Quest? Is that where you...
Yeah, for me, it's the cults, really, because it's using the cults, but not as, you know, power gamers' tools, but as exploring myth.
Yeah, it's the myths. The myths make Glorantha. The ability to integrate with the myths, to actually become part of the myths, it's literally mythic role playing, I think is their tagline, and I think that's, you know, that's it, that's Glorantha, you know, it's
that's really
It's mythic. It's got to be a bit mythic. It's got to be, it's got to cover from the really scrappy, you know, day-to-day existence of, you know, ordinary people. But it's, but they they're constantly in touch with more powerful entities. You know, they have direct personal relationships with, you know, other entities, going right up to gods. And obviously the gods are limited in what they can do. But it's the whole point that you're constantly zooming in, zooming out of, you know, the history, the myths that go with it. And again, that's so, it sounds so intimidating. If you've not done it. But actually, you know, I've been in so many games with people who've never played, you know, never played in Glorantha before. And, you know, all you've got to do is just give the idea that what you're doing now, you know, on the scrappy basic level as you're doing this, has echoes of something else, you know. And it just gives it this extra dimension. And feel free to ask me whether by school day, campaigns of RuneQuest had a lot of mythic stuff. Spoiler, not really, but the stuff now, it's and yours, you know, it started off directly scrappy, direct antagonism, and gradually got bigger and bigger. It just became, you know, we became more, not because we chose to, but because we got involved with things that were bigger, that had bigger impact. Yeah. And I think that I think, you know, that's the bit I really love about it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it is quite challenging as a, well, for me as a GM anyway, to sort of, because on the one hand, you're trying to build this mythic stuff and it's very narrative, but then the rules, apart from rune magic and stuff like that, don't really, as it currently stands, don't really support it. And so that was really hard.
Totally agree. You know, that's why the whole Hero Quest coming soon in 1978,
yes,
never appearing, was always such an issue, because people were crying out to think, okay, you keep talking about this heroic stuff and these hero quests. How can I do it with my RuneQuest game? And I don't see how I can. What, do we just say everyone's got 200%? No, it just doesn't work. So how do you do it? And, you know, again, Quest Worlds, again, it's one of the reasons why Quest Worlds can be absolutely fantastic for this stuff, because you don't have to nail it down quite so much. And it's why some people combine the two. It's, you know, you have RuneQuest Glorantha for the stuff going on the hero plane, and Quest Worlds for the stuff once you go onto the hero. You know, once you're doing anything sort of full-on heroic. Which, again, just like you, everyone bolts crap onto Glorantha.
I think it's the only way you can really make it work in the way that it's the vision. I mean, the actual application on the ground is a bit, you know, and people, as you say, people love that crunchiness and that sort of, you know, the nostalgia of it. But when you're trying to realize this, the vision as you think it should, or, you know, as you feel it should be, it's quite hard to do that, isn't it, really? Quite hard to do in games to make it mythic. Because we'll come onto rules in a second, and you know, ask Neil about his. Because I think probably what Neil wanted out would, what somebody like Neil with a different view of Glorantha might want out of a game would be different to what somebody who's already engaged with Glorantha might be.
For me, Glorantha, like you say, so it's the gods and the myths of that, and being able to approach them even from like a low level, and access to magic. I think. Like when we started playing back in the day, the idea that any character through could have access to simple spells, that was great. That idea that you could even just a sort of fairly thuggish warrior could still cast Blade Sharp and get a bit of a glowy sword. That was brilliant. So I think for me, it's like definitely the myth side of thing in terms of like character story arcs, but in terms of like play, I think access to magic. And kind of the usual stuff about, and we'll probably come onto it when we talk about rules as well.
It's the whole, the gods are real, and you know, there are no, I've also said there are no atheists in Glorantha, you know, which is, you don't have to be a cleric. Everyone has a relationship with the gods, and that's.
Do the god learners count as atheists?
God,
well, what year is it? I mean, I think there are atheists in Glorantha, right? So I think
yeah, well,
what about you, Neil? Before we get into a philosophical discussion of there are other podcasts for intelligence.
So I suppose they're anti-theists more than atheists.
Yeah, possibly. Although some of them are monotheists, aren't they? Because, of course, they believe in the invisible God.
That's just gone right over my head. Neil, from your perspective then, so what did it...
Yeah.
Is it possible for you to say what felt Glorantha or didn't? Because I don't think you had any real context.
I had no context at all. I guess going back to the point about it being intimidating for new players, and you know, I didn't feel that at all. I think there were points where, like, I could really see the difference between myself, like, not having a clue really about Glorantha, and also I think like my playing style as well, you know, I could tell in the, like, the role playing moments, you know, when people would talk about the gods and you know, and the rituals, and we'd have these moments, particularly like you know, when we get to holy places and stuff like that, and there'd be a lot of that kind of I guess mythical talk, maybe, might be the way, you know, where and I kind of struggled with that side. I mean, it's but in terms of getting into the game and just playing the game, it was great, you know. And I think I think going for a simple character is probably the way to do it, you know, keep it simple for yourself. In terms of whether it felt Glorantha, yeah, I mean, I got no benchmark for that, really. But what I would say is that over time, there was definitely a feeling to it. You know, there was a definitely a tone and a sense of continuity and of a living world that had those myths and those characters. You know, like the, you know, we had reoccurring characters. I thought that was really well done. Some of them were there to haunt us, and some of them were there to assist us, and so on. So whether Glorantha or not, I don't know. But in terms of a really deep kind of role playing backdrop and culture and so on, yeah, definitely.
I think a lot of that came out of the length of time we were playing for, because you could have recurring characters.
Yeah, I mean, using the famous scale of 0 to 100, where zero is not Glorantha at all, and 100 is probably set in the Lunar Empire somewhere, or maybe in a satrapy somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, about 40-50%, I think, you know, because I can fill in all the blanks. I mean, that's the other advantage, is even if... You know, I mean, as I imagine you do it with Lord of the Rings, when, you know, if you're in a Middle Earth game, you can fill in the back. That's why the what year is it question, despite how much some people hate it, is, like, you know, I've always said it's a bit like saying, okay, so this game's set in France in the early 20th century. And you go, well, okay, it makes a bit of a difference if it's set in like 1915.
Yeah.
That's a very different France to, say, 1936, or if it's like 1907. You know, it's a really different France. And if you just say, even if it doesn't really impact, I can fill in a whole bunch of stuff in the back of my head about, whoa, what's it like?
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't be using it to say, actually, I think you'll find that didn't happen until... But you just want to get an idea. Where are we? And there's all these big things happening. It's lovely to know in the background. So I think you can do a lot of personal fun just by, you know, and plus other people's experience with Glorantha is absolutely part of the fun. It's you know, how do other people see things? It's always been a game. It's always been a setting where there are no 100% good guys or 100% bad guys, and everybody sees everybody differently. Even just hearing the accents that people do for, you know, some Glorantha games, you know, people have got very specific accents for very specific areas.
Really?
It tells you a lot about, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, in my game, everyone sounded like they came from West Midlands, strangely
enough. They did a little, it was quite West Midlands heavy, but that was luckily because you're
just speaking Dragon Pass, I think you'll find. Sartre,
Yeah, I mean, your descriptive skill was enough that no one needed accents. You know, you didn't need to dress up every time you came on as a different NPC.
Not every time.
But we appreciated you doing it.
I mean, you know, put these things, put the work in, don't you, really? So, I mean, just so probably to touch on rules, really, because, as I say, this is the first game that I started running. And we started with RuneQuest 2. So we just started, you know, I bought the hardback, the little hardback, and a few other bits and pieces. But then, of course, you know, being me, I then started running lots of other games as well. And I'm an inveterate tinkerer. I like to take stuff, nodding on the screen. I like to take stuff from other games and then, if like, oh, that's really interesting. Let's bring that through into the game. So we started with RuneQuest 2, and then we moved to RuneQuest Glorantha, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And we saw a real, that they talk about the power differential between the characters in RQ2 and RQG. I don't know what you guys thought about that, as because we were about a year in, I think, when we sort of made that transition.
Yeah, we were in the middle of a fight, weren't we, with some brew. So we were like just about to get, I think we were getting a bit battered by these, like, two brew or something like that, you know, in RuneQuest 2. And I think there was a little bit of a pause for a few sessions. And in that time, you transitioned us over. And when we came back, we had our new shiny characters, and we just like stomped all over these brew and battered them.
Yeah, that's right.
So it definitely felt like, we are more capable now.
There is a power jump, and the power jump is rune magic. It's the fact that in RuneQuest Glorantha, all characters, even beginning characters, have access to some rune magic. Mm. You know, in RuneQuest 2, you could be playing for 10 years and never have access to rune magic, you know, which is, you know, so...
I think the skills are higher as well. So The skills are higher.
And
we were definitely tougher. I mean, there's no question about it. And also, I don't know. I mean, I felt like my character, because when I first created Terrastil in RuneQuest 2, he was more of a thief. That was how I saw him. But by the time he'd gone through that translation process, he was definitely more of a warrior, you know. And I don't know if that's a RuneQuest Glorantha's. Well, I don't know. He was still the same character, but his strengths were in different places.
Yeah, it's definitely a RuneQuest thing. Sorry to cut. My longest played character, she started also as a thief. And, you know, just by the way RuneQuest experience is awarded by using your skills, she ended up being much stronger in her combat skills than in her thieving skills. And, you know, whether you want it or not, you're driven by the actions of the character. And so she ended up being, more of a warrior type than a thieving type.
Mm.
One thing I was going to say is, so when we think, one thing we transitioned over, and when we did the original Rune RQ2 characters, we sort of we rolled it old school. So essentially just rolled your stats and they sort of, you know, fell as they may. I think that most of the characters are like size 7, but really tiny, weren't they? Except for Ursa, who like towered above everybody at sort of size 13 or 14 or something. And we sort of did play up a lot of that earlier on, but as it went on, it just became, they were very short but incredibly tough.
Yeah. I think that was good. That was stats as rolled.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I like RQ2. That was like a really, like you say, a warm glow of nostalgia about that. The fragility of the characters. And their sort of general level of competence. That really brought it back to me, how we used to muck around in the day and like say, I'll tell you what, if I power game this, I might get 40% in spear. It's like, get in 40%. So it was great. But then the shift over to RQG was great. I mean, I think it did boost us all up and made us feel a bit bigger. And I think in terms of the campaign, I think, and it might just be, I'm probably, this is just like, coincidence bias, but for me, it felt to me that we started doing more mythic stuff after we translated into RQG. Mm. And it wasn't about scuffling with brew and hoping you don't get skewered. And it started to get a bit more, this is a grand quest. And I don't know whether like reading RQG also was an inspiration about that.
What I really felt was going from RQ2, which obviously it hasn't got skills. It's like quite OSR in its approach to skills. There's not many. So I really sort of relished that huge increase in skills that are available.
I'm not sure there's that many more skills in RuneQuest Grant. I think there are a lot of skills in RuneQuest 2. But as I said, for me, it basically, RuneQuest Grant is much more mythic than just the magic. The whole background is more integrated. The gods, you know, you really feel the myths in RuneQuest Grant in a way that you don't in RuneQuest 2.
So I loved RuneQuest Grant. I thought it was great. I thought, you know, really enjoyed it. And I think, but then after a period of time, we transferred over to OpenQuest. And the reason for, and I know this is, you know, it's a contested decision, basically. But for me, there was quite a, in RuneQuest Grant, I feel like a little rules cul-de-sacs. So the stuff that is there, which could be, you know, it requires a lot of work to make it work. So things like the rules about holdings and homesteads and wealth and income and that sort of stuff, which feels Bronze Age-y. I mean, I like that sort of stuff, but it didn't feel quite fully realized to me. Also, the combat. So obviously, you know, RQG essentially is, you know, it's a real throwback, isn't it? So it's got strike ranks and that sort of stuff. And combat just took for, I never really learned the rules for combat in RuneQuest. Things like, you know, if you take this double damage to your leg and then this amount transfers through, but then only this. So combats took a long time really to do. And also just things like the numbers of skills. So, I mean, and other podcasts, I'm sure we've endlessly banged on about what's the right number of skills. What would happen is that people, you know, so as I learned from other games, I said, right, here's a skill challenge you've got to make five, you know, that dreaded phrase, which, you got to make five successes before you get three failures. And I'd say, okay, how are you going to do this? And people would naturally default to things they were good at, which is good. And people want you to do that. But what you'd end up with is you'd have a subset of skills, which everyone would work towards. And there are lots of other skills like history or library use or whatever it is, which are on the sheet, but actually didn't add any value. So that's where I came from. And that's where sort of when OpenQuest came out, I just thought, actually, that's why I moved towards that. So but I'll be interested to hear your thoughts about that, whether you hated it. We'll talk about Rooms in the Dark and other things afterwards. From that perspective, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I've no idea how geeky you want me to be, but I mean, I've frequently said in the past, I am a Glorantha file rather than a RuneQuest file. I love Glorantha, and, you know, there are other systems that I enjoy playing Glorantha in. RuneQuest has its advantages. It's very, you know, it's fantastic for combats. The crunchiness gives you an experience in combat you can't get elsewhere, but it's sometimes spectacularly infuriating with its skills. You know, you've got 90% charm and like 40% or 20% orate. Yeah. And, you know, it just is weird sometimes how incredibly good you can be at one thing and so utterly rubbish at others. And so you spend a lot of time skill picking. I mean, I think there's too many skills. And so in RuneQuest, and so I think, you know, moving to OpenQuest was absolutely fine by me. I was quite happy with it.
Well, I didn't hate OpenQuest. I just thought we lost more than we gained.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with Martin. Hate is too strong a word, and I mean, I like OpenQuest as a system.
You're angry, just disappointed.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like OpenQuest as a system, but I don't think I just don't think it's not RuneQuest. It didn't feel RuneQuest. It just felt too simplistic. You know, it's almost like, you know, if you want to do simplistic romance, just do hero quests and just have like roll d20s. You know, don't, you know, this felt like a weird sort of. I mean, you know, the thing about you know, RuneQuest is losing a limb. You know, is getting your leg chopped off, and you can't do that in OpenQuest. You know, as I said, hate is too strong a word. I like OpenQuest as a system, but I don't think it particularly suited the game, and I felt we lost quite a bit by doing it.
Yeah, well, it might surprise you, being, you know, the big RuneQuest fan that I am, but since we kept the runes and the passions, remember, in our OpenQuest sessions, it still felt quite RuneQuesty to me. Except for combat, as we just said, you know, you always miss losing those left legs, but except for that, I didn't really feel much of it.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, D100 based games are quite similar in the end, And you know, I know some people who play RuneQuest but who are not very fond of the combat system either, you know, just as I've just explained. And you know, they have simplified it, but they still play RuneQuest.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of more with Gianni than Martin and Andrew. I definitely think it was we gained a lot more, as in hours of my life back by having a combat that were fast and impactful, and you know, not having to wait like, you know, 10 minutes for your turn or 15 minutes for your turn, and I think it really worked well. I think it was, you know, there was again having the passions and the runes and so on, that work fine with Open Quest. I do like Open Quest. I like the simplicity of it, while still having, you know, still got the same spells and still got the you know, similar weapons and a very similar feel. It doesn't have the granularity, but you know, I think, yeah, the number of skills in RuneQuest Glorantha is just ridiculous. You know, and some of them I don't even know what they actually mean and what the purpose of them is. I think the only thing is that the reasoning of saying people,
I see Martin grinning on the screen.
Yeah, not enough skills for you in RuneQuest Glorantha. So you know, saying that the people tend to lean on their skills that they're good at. I think we still try to do that with Open Quest, but with not so many skills to choose from, it did give us a little bit more to think about, you know. So for me, I liked it, and I didn't miss the hit locations or any of that stuff. You know, I'm fine not having that in a game.
I think Open Quest did simplify. But maybe I'm too wedded to RuneQuest. I didn't want things simplified.
No, I think that's entirely justified, I think.
And really. Yeah, I mean, the combat's good. And I think part of that is it being online as well.
Yeah.
I think the combat's like using the, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Strike Rank in that, you know, I think it's a great idea in concept, but it's baffling at the table. So, you know, I don't mainline the RuneQuest rules and think that they're the best thing ever. But
it's a preference thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I do like bits. You know, I think, it's not like it's RuneQuest 3. At least we didn't have fatigue points. I mean, you know, lightweight.
If I'd have played RuneQuest 3, I probably would have introduced them at some point. So, you know. but yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, for me, I think someone is trying to run it, I think, and again, someone who likes to try and keep things rolling as best I can, you know, because that's a bit of momentum is quite good in the game. It was quite hard to do that in combat, and I remember thinking, oh, actually combat, it's quite soft in an Open Quest. And I think the next thing that happened was that Andrew's character got headbutted in the chest and essentially was down and almost dying. Yeah. You know, essentially in one round. So Open Quest combat is as deadly. Yeah. I think it's just a bit faster. And yeah, but I think, yeah, I appreciate that it was a choice. And it's, you know, it's as the other
room. I didn't get in the way of enjoyment.
I was gonna say, the thing is, because it's Open Quest, we don't know where I got headbutted. You see, that's the thing in Moon Quest. I could have got headbutted in the leg and just lost the leg, you see. Not actually been kind of dying. Yeah. You know, there would have been an equal chance rolling
So I'm going to guess you got headbutted in the head. That's generally where people get headbutted.
Not in RuneQuest, mate.
It depends how tall or short or otherwise debris was. It may have had headbutt to foot, chaotic creature. You never know. That's the sort of random thing you can get in RuneQuest.
So
clearly that's why I don't like Open Quest, because I nearly died in the first session. So,
but you did that. Ignore my previous ones. It all came to you.
I think one of the advantages is because it is so randomly lethal, you always think twice about getting into a fight. And I think that's that's a genuine difference between RuneQuest and, say, Dungeons & Dragons. You're playing D&D, there's going to be a fight, right? RuneQuest, you're thinking, can we get out of this without a fight? Because you never know when a Chaos Wasp is going to roll a 20 and just kill your character from absolutely fine.
That's what it is, especially. I mean, I won't say it was satisfying. It was you'd mocked my Chaos Wasps roundly.
Chaos Wasps.
And then that's it, right then. Here we go, Chaos Wasps. And it was I don't know, whatever. Poor old Gianni with his character, his only character death in the whole campaign. Yeah.
So we had a hiatus, and in that hiatus, I ran.
Yeah, you did. That's brilliant.
I ran a sort of little thing in Sun County, and I think I was much more sort of, I stuck to the old RuneQuest rules and tried to do the combats the old styly way, with non-open quest way. Yeah. And I think it was running those combats was like, this is hard work.
You'd felt you'd done it by the end of it, hadn't you? Yeah.
I could see why and that was only like a little sort of 5-6 session thing. So I could see why eventually, Steve, you sort of thought, no, screw this.
I think one of the things I found a bit harder as well was, so for example, NPCs are the same in RuneQuest as they are as characters, really. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's not a stat block like in Dungeons & Dragons, let's say, or which says this is what they do. So you have to think about, okay, and I was really bad at this, to be honest. Oh, they've cast, you know, blade shot before they're going to combat. And plus, it never, because there's just so much to think about as the GM, that's why I sort of, you know, stepped back from it. I thought, actually, this is just bloody hard work and there's enough going on. But anyway, as you say, none of it stops having fun, which was fine. But one thing which might have stopped us having fun was when the characters went to Boldholm to retrieve the red hands or the severed hands of Hofstering. And at that point, I'd been playing a game called Scum and Villainy. I thought, do you know what would work really well in this? Runes in the Dark. Yeah. And so I did a hack of... Runes in the Dark and everything else. And I just want to throw it open there. What were your reflections? Martin, what was your reflection?
I've got something written here. I put here that I thought it did work because at those points, pace was really important.
Mm.
It was a heist.
Mm,
exactly. And when you're doing a heist, pace is the thing. It's supposed to be like, you know, everything's supposed to run like clockwork. You're supposed to be getting in, getting out quick. And so I thought, like, in terms of like the system fitting the mission, I thought it worked well in that sense. Other parts of it were just like a bit mad. I mean, you got to lose magic points for that. Why am I losing magic points for this?
See, I was using, so those of you familiar with things like Blades in the Dark, they're stress. So you spend stress, don't you, to sort of when you sort of flashbacks, whatever it might be. And obviously there isn't a stress track in, so I just thought, what's close to it? Magic points. There you go. So yeah, there was definitely, as I say, I played lots of other games, and I just, almost like RuneQuest was my test bed for getting some of these mechanics and going, oh, that's interesting, and just jamming them in and see what happens. Yeah. You're my guinea pigs in this instance. So, yeah.
Again, completely happy with them. I think the, you're trying to create an experience, and some rules help with particular experiences and some rules help with other ones. And so in some ways, having the different rules actually made it more memorable because, you know, you're doing the creeping through, you know, the palace and all these sort of things. And there's different rules, which adds to the interest with it. So, I don't tell the listeners, occasionally I suspected that you had not got a 40-page binder with absolutely 100% certain rules. And occasionally Neil said that you were winging it. I always said you weren't. But Neil sometimes suggested that maybe you're winging it.
Anybody who plays a game with me knows that I am winging it all the time.
But no, it was always winging enough to keep the game going within the level that we felt we still understood. It wasn't like arbitrary. It was, you know, and again, occasionally some people would disagree with some of the decisions people make. Neil again.
That Neil, what can you say?
But you know, it was an absolute joy. And of course, the RuneQuest does have big battles. It does have great big battles. And disappointed though I was that you didn't actually stat out, you know, 50 people on each side and run it properly with, you know, each 50 people using proper RuneQuest Glorantha rules. Ranks. That's what I would have chosen with strike ranks. Of course, that's how I would have done it. But, you know, you came up with these rules, which again produced fun, you know, out. I mean, honestly, I think genuine, I mean, without The only alternative was to just describe what was going on while we sort of had individual fights using RQG, yeah. Because of course you couldn't run it with RQG. Of course you couldn't.
See, I, unlike Martin, I actually thought I really liked the Villains of the Dark One, because if we think of, as I said, if we think of myths as stories, I thought what they actually did was they really enabled us to tell a story, particularly things like the flashbacks and stuff. I thought they really, you know, it really made for a really good story. In a way that maybe the RuneQuest rules with their kind of, you know, old roll to open a lock or something, maybe wouldn't have done. So in that respect, it actually made for more narrative kind of story for things like heists. You know, you wouldn't necessarily want it in a combat situation, but for something like a heist, it really contributed to making it into a story. So I really liked Runes in the Dark. I thought it was good, used at appropriate points. It was really good, really fun.
That was the intent. What do you think, Gianni?
It was brilliant, really. Really, because I've as a GM, I've run lots of heist type of adventures, and then they can take forever. You know, like there are, I don't know, say there are six guards, you know, which makes sense for, you know, a big city palace or temple or whatever. It's going to take forever because, you know, we know RuneQuest combat. And as Martin said, pace is of utmost importance when, you know, playing a heist. And so your system enabled us to, you know, to have this rhythmical heist, you know, without losing the mission. And I love that.
Yeah, and that was the plan, really, to do that. And interestingly, I think it's the dice talks about Aegon, whatever, which is another Forge in the Dark game. And he's mentioned several times, I'm sure, that using that would be quite a good one to run a Glorantha type game, because it's all about the gods and myths and that sort of thing. And so you could do that. It's almost like akin to the, Martin is unconvinced.
Well, no, I've got views about Aegon.
I haven't played it, you see. I don't know, but I think it's something that sort of strays over into that, you know, hero quest type rule set, doesn't it? Where it's more narrative consequences rather than actions, if you like, sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Mm. Actually, that's not a bad shout. I can see that work.
Yeah.
And also, to come back to what Martin said, I didn't think it weird to lose magic points, because when you think of it, you have as many magic points as you have characteristic power. And in RuneQuest, power is the favor of the gods.
You're stressed, I'll take that post-rationalization.
It didn't feel wrong to me either, to be honest. It seemed a very sensible solution, for the same reason that Johnny said, you know. And also, you can take magic points as kind of belief, you know, and so, you know, as things go wrong, you start sort of losing belief and think, am I doing the right, you know. It's so for me, I think that it, magic points seemed fine. I didn't have an issue.
I love the fact you've thought about it more than I did when I was actually putting the thing together. So that's
yes.
There were two occasions when we did Runes in the Dark, right? And the first one was in Bold Home when we were trying to get the hands. And the second one was in Johnstown, I think it was.
That's right. For a rescue, Minerith the Purple, where he'd been captured in that lens contraption. Weird
that's
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So the first time we did it, I enjoyed it, and I thought it worked really well, and you know, it was fast moving, and it the scenes kind of folded out naturally. I thought the second time we did it, I didn't enjoy it as much. I'm struggling to think exactly why, but I recall I wasn't enjoying it as much.
Everyone was failing the roles. That's what it was.
Maybe that was what it was going to shit, and that was it. So like those, what are they called, Forged in the Dark kind of games are probably not my favorite, really. So I don't think I was enjoying the system side of it that much as well by that point. So I was glad when we kind of dropped back into I can't remember at that point whether we were using Open Quest. I think we were
at that point, yeah. I think we were just about to transition into
We were for the second one. First one, we were still using Heracles Glorantha.
Yeah. So I was kind of glad to get back to what felt to me system-wise more.
So what we're saying is that RuneQuest Glorantha is not as good as Forge in the Dark, which isn't as good as Open Quest in Neil's estimation, anyway. Is that what we're saying?
I mean, probably.
That's fair to say. All right. Yeah. And apart from, I mean, you know, I don't think we can't go through all the stuff that I jammed into RuneQuest over, because I think over 5 years I did lots of stuff. But the other thing was we did a bit of, we had some pitch battles, didn't we? Mm-hmm. We had a few battles. So one was where an enemy force under a particular Baddington had sort of headed out from Clearwine to take on Randallstead, which is Randall's village, which he actually named himself, and then everyone started calling it Randallstead, quite right too. And yeah, and we had little tokens on the map, and you guys were controlling. It was a bit like it was a war game, really.
Yeah.
And I think Gianni, I think you've got probably. You're a war gamer. You have been a war gamer in the past. I mean, I used to do a lot of that.
I'm still a war gamer.
You're still a war gamer. Once a war gamer, always a war gamer. So I'm just interested to see how, because again, there is no, as far as I can, or can find, there's no sort of similar system in RuneQuest or Anthro, or in the RuneQuest canon of rules for that type of thing.
No, they have been promising it for years, but still haven't seen it in
print. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, I love that sort of stuff. And I think, I mean, as a GM, it worked quite well. I mean, I'm just interested in what it felt like from your perspective, really. Did you feel like you had did it give the scope that you wouldn't have got if you were just like one-on-one combat?
Yeah,
I think I did. Yeah.
I think I put a big smiley face by that in my notes. I thought the mass battle rules were, you know, they were pretty basic.
They
managed to create tension on a dice roll. They managed to change the narrative of what you were trying to achieve when you were fighting, and they allowed the characters to have some individual agency within the battle. Mm. So I don't know what more you want, really. They were really good.
Mm. I thought the battle system was great. I really enjoyed those sessions. You know, it gave us an opportunity to work together and. Sorry, we always work together, but be a bit more, I suppose we have more units to control, and so it'd be a bit more tactical than perhaps we would be normally. And I enjoyed that side of it, and particularly because we won both battles as well.
It's good to win.
Yeah.
What I liked was... in sort of towards the end of the campaign, where you were sort of attacking Clearwine, so you had your character Andrew and also Doc's character, so Randall and
Sandine.
How could I forget Sandine? All right, essentially almost like in a sort of round by round scuffle in a room trying to achieve a particular objective. We had Boston in sort of almost looked like a skill challenge in another part of the city. And then we had Terrastal and Ursa essentially leading like a mass battle raid on another part of the city. And it worked for me, that worked really well because it was round by round. Although it was different things were happening, everyone was engaged, and it was real sort of, you got that micro level, which was sort of, you know, the scuffle in the room with Sandine and Randall, a bit more sort of telescoped out, which is what both Boston was doing. And then we had sort of the grand scale stuff, and I just thought I couldn't have asked for anything to work better, really. I don't know if I like your perspective, but as a GM, I thought, wow, pulled that off.
I thought that was brilliant. For me, it was like watching a film.
When you've got
three plot lines that are going on simultaneously, and but they're all interconnected, and you'd like, effectively, it was like camera pans, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The camera was like panning in, like zooming in to what Sandine was up to. Then it would pan out, and it would pan out again to the big battle scene, and it would pan back in. I thought it was really cinematic, really nicely done.
Yeah, I was really pleased with that. It was quite a big thing from a story perspective, because Clearwine was where the bad guy was, and you were achieving something. So, you know, the arch nemesis. I won't go into that because we'll explain it forever. Okay, all right. So from a player perspective, I mean, it was 5 years. Almost 5 years. A long time. Have you got a particular scene or something that you're from your character, or something that, that you know you felt your character really engaged with?
Which was the scene actually in the palace of Clearwine, where we were getting the hands, and they were in the box that could open. Only be opened by a member of the royal line of Sartor.
Yeah.
So we invoked our gods basically to open the box, and we all got marked by our gods doing it. That I think my probably favourite scene from the entire campaign.
Yeah, that was when we were breaking to Boldholm, wasn't it? And that was when we were using the runes in the dark thing. So it enabled that to happen.
Yes, but it was Boldholm, not Clearwine. Sorry. Yeah,
that's
Boldholm,
all right. Yeah. Okay.
I can picture from that. How I see it. Yeah. I can think that particularly vividly. Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff. No, it's good fun.
I have three.
Okay. Go for it.
Well, I think I know what one of them is.
One is Bofrost's death. You know, even though I lost a character, but it was through a critical in the head by a Chaos Wasp. And so, how RuneQuest is that, right?
That's the most RuneQuest-y of deaths.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another favorite. It was not a scene, but an adventure. It was the one in the icy tunnels.
Because
it felt really old school, but it was still, you know, it was still really RuneQuest.
That's one from the Johnstown Compendium, isn't it? That Krampus adventure, I think.
That's right, yeah. It was like a Christmas adventure, and it was pretty old school because you'd do things like steal your skills
and
stuff. So I think he stole your trade talk ability, didn't he?
Exactly, did. And the third one is the Bold Tome heist.
Right.
So maybe because we were lucky, as you know, Neil mentioned before, it was the most enjoyable of the two heists.
I think it was capped off when the rest of the party were trying to escape, and then Bofrost or Boston?
Bofrost.
Stepped out from behind a secret passage he'd found behind a tapestry.
That's right,
and sort of pulled to one side, and everybody breathed a huge sigh of relief because everyone was running out of magic points. Carrying consequences. And so I think it was just, oh, thank God. And got out. So yeah, it was all good.
I'd agree with that one. I thought that was a great end to the heist, was because we were screwed. guards pounding down corridors towards us. And then we sort of managed to escape thanks to Bofrost. That was great. I think for my character Ursa, I think the Battle of the Broken Tower, actually. I think that was the first time I got a sense of actually we're operating on a big scale. And that felt quite significant. And I think Ursa, when she lost her spear and in those
tunnels,
in the freezing caverns, I thought that was quite. I enjoyed playing that. And then I just think like Ursa's life was just punctuated with tragedy. So kind of there was a great moment for me. There was like it's one of the favorite characters probably I've ever played. I absolutely loved her as a character. She was just so morose and rubbish, and then occasionally trying to impress Terastal. And that was actually quite a good moment as well, when Terastal and I were thrown out of the tribe when we were outlawed. And you felt, actually, that's quite significant.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a game, but actually that felt like, oh, that's quite bad.
But I think playing a sort of a series like that over a long period of time means that you do start to invest in not the characters, but also the world around you as well. So, you know, if you've been playing for a few sessions, you get kicked out of a tribe, it's like, well, whatever, you know, whereas actually your entire livelihood, character, everything you've done is being within that tribe, then it means something. And likewise, when characters that you, NPCs, that you, and as a GM, I had a big Excel spreadsheet of all these characters, and I'd bring them back occasionally. So you weren't interacting with them all the time. But I think the fact they popped up every now and then just gave it that real sense of continuity.
I mean, obviously, for Randall, kind of marrying his childhood sweetheart, founding a stead, and having children as well, you know, it's kind of real, obviously, big moments for him as well. Ursa, I really enjoyed the kind of fatalistic death scene she had with Sandine, where she got a bit obsessed with death when her death rating got super high.
Yeah.
And she had these really fatalistic conversations with Sandine. I thought that was brilliant.
That was just Ursa, though. It's just very, very, very miserable. Very miserable.
What about from your perspective now? What about Terastal?
Oh, here we go.
In your head.
There's quite a few. I think the one Martin mentioned was Baranthos's trial. And that was kind of, you know, we'd done a lot of work trying to get the tribes on our side. And it was kind of touch and go, but we kind of swung it, and then Kangal did the dirty, and I think there was a clan leader, Griselda, and he basically, I can't remember the reason now, but he basically said she'd broken faith or something like that, and her vote didn't count. And then everyone got all angry and whatever, and it was just it all erupted into a big battle. And I remember there was a point where there was me and Ursa were fighting, you know, side by side, and we were fighting Kangal, and you know, and he was really tough, and Randall had disappeared, and I was like, you know, Terrestrial was like fuming at Randall, and obviously Randall had a plan, I guess, which Terrestrial didn't see, and it was that whole thing, and it was just, it felt like it could have been that moment where we literally fought to the death, but you know, we were able to escape, and then that led to more in the Broken Tower. But that was like I think that was a turning point, because you know up until that point there was hope that you know doing things properly, you know following the laws and the customs and so on could see some kind of justice, and you know, Baranthos would be saved, and so on, and of course then you know, I think we all realized perhaps what Terrestrial knew deep down anyway, which was that Kangal was just a complete bastard and deserved to die, and so there was that, and then the other one I really enjoyed has been mentioned, but was in Boldholm. And I think this goes back to a particular GM trick that Steve employed quite a lot for Terrestrial, because Terrestrial was a simple character, and I guess you might say he was easily triggered by certain things, and there are buttons that yeah, well, that's so much ducks, although you did come to distrust ducks, anything lunar, and I think it was a button that Steve knew how to press really well, so he set up these little encounters and set pieces where they were kind of, I mean, I don't know if they were consciously designed to trigger Terrestrial, but that seemed to be the effect. And so there's one point in there, you went to somewhere in Boldholm, I can't remember where, I don't think it was a temple, but there was,
you're trying to get into the palace.
It was in the lead up to that, so there was a big open place, and there's an old man there and whatever, and these two lunas were like being really like, you know, horrible to him, whatever, and Terrestrial was like, you know, what are you doing? And then they got a bit leery, and then Terrestrial killed one of them, and then the other one, and they tried to kill the other one, but the other one got managed to evade and run away, whatever, so he was then hunted down, and he ended up kind of abandoning all his weapons and going and crawling amongst all the mud and the shit.
Shaving his hair off.
Shaving his hair and beard off.
You hid in a ditch and then Randall and Boston had to go out and find you.
That's right, yeah.
They were the only people that could walk about the city, because they were both merchants, they could walk about the city.
That's right. Oh my God, yeah. I know there was a lot. I really enjoyed the bolt.
Do you remember the consequence of that for the old man?
Yeah, he got crucified, didn't he? Yeah.
But Sandine had no problem with that. I mean, she thought he was an idiot, but you know, that's how things are, right? People war, innocents get killed. You know, that's why you need protectors. But when he broke his oath, because he was so angry, and he's that was really tough for Sandine, because she is he came up with reasons why he hadn't really broken his oath. And I think Sandine sort of went, okay, but she was never sure about it after that. And she was, she went through a big phase of, wait a minute, maybe he's not a good hero. Maybe he's a bad hero. Yeah. So she was a bit freaked out by that. And then finally on the bridge in hell, when, you know, he was held up for being an oath breaker. And Sandine, at that point, went, you know what? I'm going to go with him. I'm going to support Terrastil, and I'm going to argue for his life and hate Oathbreaker's, you know, passion drop like a stone, because that was a big thing for her, because she had to choose between her companion and, you know, and how important your word is. So yeah, so I always felt that was an interesting dynamic there.
Yeah, definitely. So what I really enjoyed in this game was
crucifying old Menstein.
No.
Just admit it.
Well, you know, it was gonna have a hobby. But what I enjoyed, and this wasn't just for Terrastil, but it was for everybody, was just say putting the NPCs in there and putting situations in, and then just saying, well, you can go this way or you can go that way, and then showing that there are consequences of those what he did. And I think, you know, it, for me, when I'm running the game, and there's choices, and those choices may have, there's no good choice. Each one has got a slightly, you know, a downside to it. And I think in that situation where Terrastil had tried to, you know, protect this guy, and then the Lunars had sort of taken him and, you know, for the death of the Lunar Guard, essentially crucified him. And then showing the party this the next day, it was like, but also there was the real upsides as well. So the stuff like, you know, where you guys were in Runegate and you decided to free Runegate from this cult, the Black Oak Brotherhood, that were sort of oppressing the locals. And I gave you every option to just say, nope, that's it, we're going. And you went, right, now we're going to go back and we're going to free them. And then when you marched out there and you'd got most of the populace on your side, just the pride you could see it. And I absolutely loved that in the game. So, you know, just, it was that, you know, the ability to have that detail and that sort of continuity and that sort of bit of granularity to the world. I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did it evolve? Because obviously I'd never played, I'm trying to think if I'd ever played with any of you ever before. No, I don't think I had. I knew Zos.
You were so very enthusiastic when you joined the game, though. I loved it.
Well, of course I was enthusiastic. It was and I just think there was... again, the players, possibly because somebody, not important who, kept repeatedly beating them down and destroying everything they lived for. I think it bonded us together. I think we became, you know, I found it. You know,
I forged bonds stronger than steel through adversity.
You did.
What are you saying?
Yeah, that's what I did. So, you know, top GMing, mate. I mean, a lot of GMs would have occasionally said, Should I cut them a break? Should I rampage? Should I destroy their town they've worked so hard to go towards? Should I kidnap them again? Should I, you know, find people they love and sacrifice them? Should I do that? Maybe I should let them off once. But no, the bonds of steel would have frayed if you had.
Find that I'm the most generous and kind GM.
Everyone has different views about that. But again, I'm not complaining at all. I've definitely played with GMs who have been possibly less. The outcome has been less awful for the characters, but you've just felt it was done out of meanness. Whereas I felt that you destroyed everything we lived for over and over again out of a sense of, you know, you guys can handle this. Great. This is the level of heroes you are. I wouldn't do this if I didn't trust in you guys to fix it.
It was okay. Where would you have been if it would have, you know, essentially the story would have stopped. It'd be, oh, we're on our farms now, having a lovely time, wouldn't it? So, you know, this is it. It's all about, you know,
you're right. Because either we're being constantly harassed by Chaos Wasps or we're farming. There's no middle ground.
Twice Chaos Wasps.
No middle ground, Steve. It's one or the other. Miserable or farming. That's all we got.
That's all it could be. Miserable, heroic, or on a farm. Brilliant. So was there a particular element of it that sort of, you know, from your perspective that you stuck with you, or was it just the whole experience?
It was all the relationships. It was a relationship between the characters. It was Randall desperately trying to be, you know, an important person in Sartar, you know, trying to do the sort of normal trappings of, you know, getting wealthy and having a wife and doing these. So he was very much at that level. You know, Ursa was very much had this ingenue, gradually becoming more powerful, picking her route, you know, Sandine trying to, you know, pull her over to make her a warrior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and her thinking, no, I don't want to be a warrior. I want to be able to fight, but I don't want to be a warrior. You have sacrificed too much. This death rune is not for me. You know, I want family. I want friends. I want ponies. You know, I mean, it seemed to be a big part of it.
Became half pony.
But and so Terrastal was just this constant force of, you know, as I say, he was just angry. He was just, you know, the Lunas had taken his country and he hated them. Mm. And he hated that, and he hated the lack of power, you know, he had, and he was just constantly up against it. And so watching us, you know, interacting with this hatred and trying to make him, you know, just chill a bit. And also someone's going, you know what? Yeah, let's get him. I think it was a real shame Gianni died, because again, when you've got characters on an arc and they die, it's really difficult to come back in again with another character at the start of an arc, I think. So I think that knocked Gianni back a bit. But the key thing was absolutely the characters and how they moved. The outside world, you know, has to happen, because that then influences them. But they were all just constantly molding each other. They were helping each other get married. They were sort of, you know, pulling each other out of the mire, you know, spiritually in other ways. So, yeah, it was the characters.
So, like I say, first game I played, come back to the topic, it's the longest game I've ever run. I think for me, learning, obviously, has learned about running games and how to annoy people with different mechanics that I like from other games as well. I think for me, I think if I was doing it again, what I probably wouldn't do is have a story arc. I think a story arc over that period of time is just, I can't imagine. I feel really sorry. No, so you hear about these showrunners, so people run these long camp, like the people who run House of Game of Thrones, and they got to the last season, and then it all goes a bit Pete Tong. Coming towards the end of this, the pressure that I felt under to try and to end it in a way that everything lived up, that would live up to what came beforehand, was horrible. And I would never, ever do that again. I think the old school way of saying, here are situations, how do you respond to it, is much, much easier than here's a big story arc. That's what I learned.
I think story arc was great. I think for me, it was sometimes it was hard to know when we were really moving forward in the story, because there were things that just seemed to come up. Yeah. And it was like side quests, or they weren't always side quests, but there were things that I guess we didn't always know we needed to do. And there were times where you're kind of thinking, how for me particularly, because not knowing a lot about Glorantha, I was thinking, well, how does this work? How do we get here? And sometimes it felt like there was like lots of steps to get to where we needed to be, and it didn't always, but I liked, there was so many scenes and so many places we visited that I really, really enjoyed. That almost like the story arc wasn't like the main thing.
Secondary.
It was only towards the end when it was coming to a conclusion that it really took on significance, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But for me, I came to the realization that the actual heart of the story was about getting shot of Kangol, the king. That was what people really cared about. The marriage contest was just like this thing. And I think, you know, what I've learned is, it's running RPG 101 really, which is put characters in situations, then see what happens and follow that, rather than having in the back of your head this big thing that was happening.
No, I think that was fine. I think it's important that you've got a backdrop to let us, you know, because there were periods of time where we go, well, what do we do next? Mm. And the point was, there was always this sort of baseline plot to go back to and say, oh, well, okay, we better go and do that. And that then threw out, you know, so we did the next stage of that. That threw out a whole bunch of new plots. And that was great that we could follow them for a bit and then we could go on to the next bit. So it was, there was always like a sort of, it gave, as you say, it gave a spine. So we never felt directionless. It was always, are we going to do this next bit of the overarching plot, And, you know, I don't think we really, you know, I'm describing it in a really meta way. But, you know, there was this sort of overarching plot of, you know, of Terra Still and the marriage and all this sort of stuff, which is always there. Are we going to do that? Or, you know, we've got a couple of weeks left in the season. Let's go and sort this out. I mean, it's like, you know, Kangal, absolutely. The bit where, where he sent his guys off to take out the Elad army. Oh my god, I've forgotten their names now. Because they're all gone now.
Yeah.
Eladori. Oh, anyway. But he already had. Yeah, Eladori. He already had. That was the point. We were sitting there trying to persuade him not to, and he already had. And so Sandin just disappearing off, howling, to try and avenge, getting there to discover he had already laid waste to the place. You know, she couldn't save them. Because he'd already done it before he'd got there. And just the, you know, the anger and the betrayal and the charging into a flipping rune lord, getting into a fight.
Coming out alive, which was...
And coming out of her life. But at that point, again, there were so many points. Honestly, there were so many points. And I was thinking, yep, this is a good way to die.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I would have been genuinely heartbroken if she'd been killed by a Chaos Wasp. But there were so many ways. There were so many fights she got.
About that.
Still furious. But there were so many fights that we got onto and said, yes, this would be a good time to die because that would fit. And she was always expecting to die. You know, she always felt that she was, you know, she'd been pulled out of hell, but she was going back. You know, she knew what hell was like. She'd be back there. She had. She was just here for a bit to do. You know, things for a goddess. Mm-hmm. So she was, death root 90-odd%. So a connection to the world was always a bit tenuous. But she just, you know, she got through it.
Yeah. But obviously you reminded me of this very, I'd completely forgotten about Kangol and that sort of, you know, the fact that he'd essentially tried to make him as horrible as he could be, and with as many of these little twists and turns, because I just knew it added more and more depth to people's engagement with the game. But as I say, you know, trying to bring that 5-year sort of game to a... It's so... I would wake up in the night thinking about how to do that. And it's never going to be good. It's never going to be what you want it to be. You can, Dennis, I know Martin sort of made the comment, you can never... have a truly satisfying end to something like, because it's always going to be, you know, I don't know. It's always going to be a challenge. I think it's fair to say.
I thought it was, in terms of ends of long campaigns, I can think of, I think that was a very successful one.
Yeah. Nobody, no characters died, which is good.
Which again, really wouldn't have mattered because that was the point. We were in hell. We were expecting to die. I was expecting Terra Still to die. I was expecting, you know, several of us to die, and that would have been fine. And the fact that we got out,
and it came close on a couple of occasions.
Of course, it did. Because of the way that Hero Quest Worlds Quest Open Quest,
a quest of sort of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah, the question, but the way that it works, it's very easy for things to go horribly wrong. And but no, I thought it was because we also knew it was coming. Yeah. We knew it was happening for a year and a bit. Mm. We knew our doom.
Yeah.
Our doom was to descend to hell, and we knew we would have to do it. And so everything else was sort of trying desperately to build up the support and the power, you know, on the ordinary world to actually be that we didn't die.
The true victory was the fact that this king who'd been sort of, you know, stymieing you every turn as you'd gone through Kangol, that you managed to steal his soul and then abandon him in the lunar hell. I think that was the victory.
I think that was, you know, from a story point of view, I think that was absolutely amazing. Yeah. But I think from a player point of view, the fact that we all got out, and we all could then describe what we were doing, because all of us could have just, you know, had no problem saying, "Well, this is what I'll be doing this year, and the year after that I'll be doing this, and the year after," because, you know, the characters were so strong at that point that you could just keep writing stories in your head. And the fact they all got out and got to do that was tremendous.
Yeah, no, I get you. And I think that's for me, it's making it too complicated. That's what I learned. Try keep it simple if you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree.
it was always going to be tough. But again, this is where, again, whinge, you know, Glorantha. But, I mean, one of the great things about Glorantha is your character has all this baggage behind them, you know, because of the decisions you've made in creating the character, who they follow, who their cult is, who their family is, who they're, you know. So when you've got a bunch of characters wandering around interacting, it's not just them. They're like the front of this wedge, and they come with a huge bunch of baggage, which creates story. Because even if the four characters in the center are getting on, I'm sort of imagining this circle. But there's all this other stuff over which does not mash. We can get on well, but all our baggage behind us is going to clash and run into problems and cause stories and cause difficulties. And it's almost impossible for us to have a stable anything because, you know, all our background makes it difficult.
I like a big story, I say. That's great. But yes, the pressure to finish it in that leaves everybody satisfied.
And I don't think you can ever really achieve it. I think it's never quite as, you obviously run Full Delta Green, which is a big long campaign. I know we talked in previously about, you know, the pressure of having something that ends. And although I don't know, I love playing it, and I thought the end was great. I just wonder whether, as the GM, whether you think, actually, was that as good as it could have been? I think there's always that sort of...
I don't think I've ever finished a session thinking, that was brilliant. I couldn't have done that any better. that's what makes you want a GM, is that you think you can get it better next time.
But then you can set yourself up for success by not making it hard for yourself. And that's what that's what I felt, God, the burden of trying to do it. It's supposed to be fun, for God's sake.
You're right. I don't think you can ever have an end that is meaningful enough to justify such a huge campaign. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
So you've just got to kind of do the best, set it up as best you can, and then see what the players do. And then, go with that.
Yeah.
I think it was really great. And I liked how two or three of the characters also had their own stories who were added on top of the great overarching story, which is I think more difficult to attain just the big story.
Yeah, I agree with Johnny. What you were really good at was letting us or our characters do stuff outside of the story. You know, as I said, you know, for instance, you know, Randall's dead, and as I said, I got married and had children even, you know, so stuff that wouldn't necessarily, you know, I mean, it's stuff that might occur in a long running campaign, but it's not kind of, you know, it's not central to the plot, although you made my children central to some of the plot at one point, you know, but it's almost a reverse of the kind of role playing thing of, oh yeah, all my characters' family and friends are dead, you know, to stop the GM kind of
but when I think back, the stuff that, you know, I really enjoyed about the game and the characters and the interplay were that stuff. So it's, you know, getting kicked out of the tribe, being taken in by another tribe, the relationship with, with Boston and Bofrost and Randall and Sandine. Obviously, we haven't touched on Sandine's role up to yet. And also, you know, that, but really that was almost nothing to do with this meta plot that was going on. So I think maybe actually that it's more about, as you say, it's the interaction, how the characters grow over time, rather than the actual, you know, achieving a hero quest or something.
Great how we managed to mix, you know, the standings story arc, you know, with the Pie of the Worms friends guy,
Darhash.
Yeah, and then we managed to use that to end the story.
It was
very satisfying.
So I think it's getting late. We've been talking for an hour and a half. I think we probably could talk for, and I'm sure we will, over beers at some point in the future. Gianni, we'll have to come over to Paris, or you'll have to come over to the UK. I think it's best if we come to Paris, actually. So just wanted to say thanks very much for sort of being players in one of the best game, if not the best game I've ever had the fortune to run. It's certainly been the longest, and it was a brilliant introduction back into the hobby for me as a GM. And long may it continue.
You know, genuinely, really, thank you so much, Steve. I think it was a fantastic experience. I think it It was the best prolonged Glorantin experience, honestly, that I've probably had, really, because I think, you know, it's so much better when you've got time, and years just gives you time to do it. And thank you. And I know that sometimes you were getting a bit, you know, what am I doing now? And I think it was, but you kept going for us because we were enjoying it so much. You kept going. So, you know, really, thank you. Yeah. It was awesome.
No, it was a fantastic experience. And yeah, we all enjoyed it. And I know we'll end up gaming. And we have done it in other games. And we'll game together again.
We will indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks, all right.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Steve. Steve.
Thanks for listening to another exploration of my gaming vexes. If you've got any thoughts you'd like to add to what you've heard here, or a gaming vex of your own you'd like to offer up for discussion, you can contact me on Twitter at AllAnthR, or you can leave a voice message. The link's on the podcast webpage on Anchor, or can be found in the show notes. Until the next time, may all your games be free of vexatiousness, and be excellent to each other, always.